Podcast Rebellion, Hangover Edition. We're back at it again here in the Second Line Studio. I'm your host, Zach Berry. Joining me, as always, Nicholas Carr, Benjamin Woodhouse. Gentlemen, it was as nerve-wracking, as heart-burning, as stroke-inducing as it possibly could have been. I actually had my first acid reflux flare-up in probably the first, 9 months. But the Rebels got the win. Is all that matters, 59-42, and they covered to improve to 3-4 overall. South Carolina 2-5, and some semi-breaking news before we hit the record button. Per Bruce Feldman, the Gamecocks have parted ways with Will Muschamp. So real quick, before we jump into the game, first name that jumps to your mind, who do you think they go for?
Hugh Freeze.
Oh, God.
I mean, that's a name that sticks out, man. I hate to even say it.
I think this has I think Billy Napier written all over it. Coastal.
I can see
it. Coastal Chadwell is his name. Is it Chad Chadwell?
Coastal Chadwell?
Chadwell. It's Jamie Chadwell.
Chad Chadwell. That's the most Myrtle Beach name ever.
Chadwell.
He's done a fantastic job, and he spells it super Myrtle too, J-A-M-E-Y. Holy hell, where is his wife from? His wife's name is Somals. That is a crazy name. Somals Zarine. Imagine having to spell that when you're in second grade. He's a hot name because Coastal is undefeated, but I would be hesitant to hire him just because of recruiting. Yeah, can he put together an elite staff to recruit? I think Napier can just because of the credentials and the bona fides on his resume being at Alabama. I think if you're Billy Napier right now, you're kind of like, man, I'm 2 years ahead of schedule.
Carolina kind of likes to go after name coaches too. I mean, they had Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier in our lifetime. So maybe they go after the older guy. They seem to have success with that.
I would go Billy Napier. I'd give him a call. I mean, I'm just looking through their schedule at it. I feel like I hadn't heard a ton about them. It's because they lost earlier in the year to Coastal before they could kind of get their feet off the ground. And since then, they've won 4 games in a row. So, they beat Iowa State, if y'all remember, but way back at the beginning of the season. They're 7-1. And, I mean, at this point, he's done it. Yeah, he's done it 3 years in a row. So, man,
I do like the idea of Sark. We talked about it in our group text a couple weeks ago when I randomly did a deep dive into Washington's Wikipedia and just how average to below average they were before Sark. I mean, they had – I think his name was Don James. The guy that was there forever, won the national title in the 90s. He was there for so long. Outside of him and then one good year with Neuheisel – they were very, very, very average to bad before Sark. And Sark actually, I think, won 7 games in his first year after they were just absolutely abysmal with, what was his name? Ty Willingham. So Sark's done the quote unquote rehab gig at Bama. Their offense is probably the only offense that comes close to Ole Miss right now. It's pretty much them in Florida, in my opinion.
What about Josh Heupel down at Central Florida? This is second year, is that right? Or third year?
I think it's his third. I don't hate it. Again, it brings me back to, can the staff be elite? Can they recruit? Because you got to remember the 900,000 pound elephant in the room in that state with Clemson. You got to be able to compete. So I like Napier a lot. I think that he hindsight's 20/20, but excellent call on his part to pass on State. And I think he's kind of out there waiting now. So we'll see. That'll kind of start to unfold this week. All jokes aside, I hate it for Coach Boom. I like Will Muschamp. It's a tough job there, like I said, with Clemson there. You're having to recruit against Clemson in-state, and then you're also having to recruit against Georgia a lot, Tennessee a lot. It's a weird gig there, but I think, people have shown you can win big there. So big opportunity for whoever takes over.
he's probably, you know, a victim of Clemson's success. I mean, not to say that he's done exceptionally well over there, but I don't know if they're where they are, you know, if Clemson isn't where they are. In the same way that last year, I don't think that, you know, MSU fires their coach and hires Leach if we don't hire Kiffin. I mean, he was kind of Moorhead was kind of a victim of us hiring Kiffin. I just think that South Carolina, it's got to be eating them alive. I mean, you know, especially when they're not even your conference. So you do get to play them every year, but it's not like, oh, well, you know, Bama will go off and beat them or something. You just kind of have to watch idly as they run through the ACC and there's nothing you can do about it. Even if you beat them at the end of the year, it probably still wouldn't keep them out of the college football playoff. So and that's just,
yeah,
you know, a time and place issue with Muschamp there.
Right. The strange thing to me was, you know, he hasn't won a lot there. He's had some big wins. They've upset Georgia a couple times. He still recruited well. They were able to land some big in-state guys that Clemson wanted, and he won a lot of recruiting battles. They recruited well at the quarterback position. Helinski, I think, is obviously going through a sophomore slump of some kind. They were able to commit Colton Gauthier. I mean, time will tell if he remains committed since Muschamp is gone, and I would imagine that the offensive coordinator that I'm just losing my mind. I'm drawing a complete blank. Mike Bobo. Is he going to stay? Who knows? I highly doubt a new staff will retain him.
Mike Bobo's in the past, man.
I mean,
they're not creative enough. They don't have the talent level to do what they're doing. Mike Bobo can exist in an Alabama or Georgia program, but in a program like South Carolina, it's just going to be very hard for them to maintain success running the type of offense that they're running. I mean, they're huddling us like watching teams in the 1960s play. Now, they had a lot of success against Ole Miss. I'm not saying, and I think Mike Bobo is a good coach. I just don't think that's a good fit. I don't know. At the same time,
this is a good segue to go into the game, because I thought Mike Bobo panicked on Saturday.
I agree.
When Ole Miss
game, I want to say one thing.
Okay,
I never think that it's the right time to fire a coach in the middle of the season. I mean, is Ray Tanner still the athletic director?
I mean,
unless it's Houston nut bad. Like losing by 30 at Vanderbilt and you're going to go 2-10. I just don't know why you fire him now. And I don't know why you would fire Muschamp after the Ole Miss game, when Ole Miss is probably top five offense in college football and South Carolina is just kind of struggling. It's not like they're the worst team I've ever seen play. Their players have not quit, but firing him now, just let him finish in a COVID year. It's a weird look for me, man. That's just weird. I don't like the optics of it.
Well, yeah. I mean, it would be different if Ole Miss won 59-7.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I mean, they were in the game. I mean,
they were leading with going into the fourth quarter almost before the 91-yard touchdown pass. I believe they were up 35-31.
42-38 in the fourth. Yeah. End of the third, I believe. I'm looking at the drive chart here. Ole Miss goes up 45-42 on the 91-yard bomb to Elijah Moore. Then South Carolina went 5 plays for 15 yards, punt. Ole Miss goes 8 plays, 80 yards, goes up 10. Then South Carolina went 4 plays, minus 1 yard, turnover on downs. Ole Miss scores 4 plays, 24 yards, go up 59-42. Then South Carolina, 11 plays, 70 yards. They get into the red zone, and they turn it over on downs. Talking about Mike Bobo, and then we'll jump into the game. I thought they completely panicked when Ole Miss went up by 3, which was, to me, was just weird, because at that point, I know Matt Corral was just playing out of his mind, but you have to just keep doing what got you there and just feed Kevin Harris. Because, I mean, I was telling Nick before we started, I mean, Kevin Harris is leading the SEC in rushing now because of this game. He did whatever he wanted running the football. And I think that it was weird to just put everything on Colin Hill. And I just thought, at least you run the football with Kevin Harris, you kill some clock. And he had been just getting whatever he wanted I mean, he wasn't getting touched until 5 or 6 yards down the field most of the night. I thought that was just a weird move on Bobo's part. And then Ole Miss, to their credit, took advantage. And then, look, the defense might be a bend and bend and bend and bend and bend and then don't break. But, look, they turned him over twice. One time, right?
The interception early.
Yeah, one turnover. Now, hell, they had what seems like 3 or 4 chances for fumbles that were just, you know, near misses. But they got the pick early, capitalized, scored on it, and then they got sacks and they got stops. The secondary made plays at the end of the game. As weird as it is to say, now the defense, don't get it twisted. They're not good. They didn't play well. But when they needed it most, they were able to step up and make a play. So that's something that you can build on. I know you gave up 548 total yards and Kevin Harris had a career day, but still, a win is a win. And I still think it's Jimmy's and Joe's. I know Ben probably disagrees. Nick, you might too. I don't think it's all Jimmy's and Joe's. I think it's probably a good 60-40, maybe 70-30 play calling to Jimmy's and Joe's, but I still think you got to recruit out of this issue. But man, absolute tip of the cap and then some to Matt Corral, 28 of 32, 513 yards. That's a school record and 4 touchdowns. They just Lane Kiffin and Jeff Levy put on an absolute clinic on Saturday.
Well, there's no question that you've got to recruit out of this. Yes, it is a Jimmy's and Joe's issue partially. I actually don't disagree with your assessment. I think you could say 50-50, 60-40, 70-30. Either way, you got to get better up front, especially, you know, we were talking about dissecting the game last night afterwards with some of my family members. And, you know, I was like, man, we get pushed downfield in zone blocking. That's like not even supposed to be a thing. And our tackles are 5 and 6 yards downfield. And I don't think that they would argue with that. You can't. That's what we're watching. But at the same time, the team we do not contain at all. And at some point you're either going to say, okay, well, our linebackers all run slower than 5 second 40s, or even if they do, like, you got to turn the guy back inside eventually. We let so many people get to the sideline. Look, I agree with playing inside out when you're faster than the opposing team, like the Land Sharks, man. Mike Hilton, those guys, Sedarius Bryant, they didn't have to contain because they were going to beat the guy to the sideline anyway. They used the sideline as an extra defender. We're not fast enough to do that. I mean, frankly, we're not. I will give them props. There was one play in particular, and I think it was in that 5-play, 15-yard drive, Zach. It was third down. South Carolina was going to run a receiver screen to the near side of the field, to the home sideline. And I don't know if it was Finley, or I don't want to give anybody credit for it because I'm going to have to go back and see who jumped it. But they sent this big tight end, number 9, in motion to our side. And they had run this play several times in the game, so we kind of knew what was coming. Well, when 9 stopped, they snapped the ball, and quarterback raises up immediately, throw a bubble screen to whoever the receiver is out there. Let's say Shai Smith, probably. And our DB jumped it before the ball even hit the quarterback's hands. So they had to kill it. I mean, he just had to take a sack. So anyway, I thought that we did make some big plays, and Kiffin talked about that in his press conference. But at the end of the day, until we start turning teams inside, we just don't have the speed to allow them to pursue inside out, which I think when you are, like I said before, when you are fast, is a very sound a strategy, because you're going to force them out of bounds before they can get to the edge. Right now, we can't do that. It doesn't matter which running back it is. We're just not fast enough to do it. And I don't know if that's because the linemen are getting pushed so far downfield that the offensive line is getting in the way of our linebackers, or if our linebackers are just slow. I don't know the answer, but there's a definite lack of it's like you said, Zach, this is probably the best way to say it. It's just a kind of a lack of everything right now. It's a lack of, you know, you can't tell me that they're not being coached completely well. Otherwise, I believe they'd be turning guys inside. And that's my untrained eyes looking at it. There were several runs last night where this running back from South Carolina, especially going into the north end zone to the student side, northeast corner of the end zone, where we just completely, it's like we weren't even in the on the same field as him. He was running by himself to the pylon. It's like, man, you got to get somebody out there. Either we're outnumbered, which is a scheme, or we're not getting to the beating him to the edge, which is either a scheme or an effort issue. So either way, well, a lot's got to happen.
Well, the twofold here, you said the word effort. And Ben, you played football as well. I've always said that tackling is purely effort.
It is. It absolutely is.
You can coach up technique. You can teach people how you want them to tackle. But at the end of the day, it's do you want to make a tackle or do you not? And I think it was – if you watch the game, and I have to go back and look at it again, and Nick, you can chime in and tell me if I'm wrong here. Ben, you can too. I say Jimmy's and Joe's because I think there were a lot of times in that game where Ole Miss was there. Lakia Henry, Jock Jones, John Haynes, and I'm not calling them out for any particular reason. I'm just naming guys that were on the defense that were around the football a lot. They were there. They just either weren't fast enough, took a poor angle. And a lot of that, I think, is just talent. I think it's just – I just don't think they have the dudes. I mean, we say that a lot, but I think that's true. And look, if you want to do the whole, like, you got to fire DJ Durkin, whatever – I know the defense is just incredibly bad numbers-wise. They're giving up so many yards every game. But like I said, at the end of the day, they were able – now, it took them four quarters, but they made adjustments, and they got a stop when they needed it, and they won the football game. So it's – and I don't know if you can fix it in this recruiting class. It's going to take a couple of years to build some depth, some legitimate SEC depth. But that's my untrained eye – analysis is they're in position, but they're just not there to make the play in time to where it's just they're not reading their keys fast enough and getting there, or they're just not fast enough in general.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. We were in position a lot of times, but at some point, you know, it's game after game after game after game of like these guys having like a career day. And we talked beforehand about you know, the running back from South Carolina, I didn't realize that he was actually a pretty good back. I think you said he was top five in the SEC coming into the game, which is higher than I would have expected. But now he's the number one back in the SEC from a yards per game perspective after he played us. You know what I mean? It's that after that after that every single time. I mean, maybe we do just have like UT Martin defensive players. I mean, that's possible. But something tells me, I mean,
these had guys a UT Martin coach before this.
I mean, you're exactly right. Or worse. I mean, but a lot of these guys were highly recruited by, or not maybe not highly recruited, but a lot of these guys were recruited by other SEC.
I mean, they had at least Kentucky offers.
Exactly. And when I look at us, like every single person, every single team we play is having a breakout game. Like Kentucky's having their best rushing game of the season. Florida's throwing for their most passing yards in an SEC game ever. Alabama's throwing for their most passing yards. And on top of, you know, that, Najee Harris also scoring five touchdowns. It's like every single team, they set a record, this or that. At some point, you know.
What, did Kentucky run for over 400?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, heck, you know, it was the second most Vanderbilt had scored all season. Technically, I know that was, you know, we still
hopefully
beat the crap out of them.
Still with us because all we've been is negative after a big win.
No, it's okay.
It's going to get more positive before the end of the show. Just stick with it.
It's sour and then sweet here, right?
That's right. Sour Patch Kids podcast. So last thing before we hit our break and then we talk offense and get to the good stuff. If you're Lane Kiffin, and this might sound crazy, do you try to hire Will Muschamp as a analyst?
I mean, do they have any prior relationship? Are they coached together at all?
No,
they don't. But
I mean, yeah, if he wants to come over here, yeah.
I know people want to say, well, he just gave up, his team just gave up 708 yards, but I mean, you're going up against the guy that you might work for. So,
I mean, we just gave up like 600 or something.
Well, yeah, but look, I mean, Kiffin and them have done this to everybody. So this isn't just, South Carolina's terrible. I mean, they did it to Alabama. So, all right, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to touch on the offense and the career day that Corral had. Elijah Moore continues to just steamroll to A.J. Brown's single season record. And we'll talk about plenty of other stuff. So hang tight. Quick word from the sponsors, and then we'll be back here. Podcast Rebellion Hangover Edition, South Carolina. It's Zach again, Podcast Rebellion, to remind you of our lovely sponsors here at the show. If you like New Orleans-inspired cuisine, go see Kelly English and the good folks in Memphis at Second Line or Restaurant Iris for some fantastic food and cocktails. You can also travel down to the coast to Magnolia House in Biloxi at Harrah's Gulf Coast. Blackjack, craps, slots, southern cooking, cocktails, what's not to like? All three fantastic establishments, part of the Kelly English Restaurant Group. Good food, good people, good cocktails. It can't be beat. That's Second Line, Restaurant Iris in Memphis, and Magnolia House in Biloxi. Speaking of good food, if you're in Oxford, go see Greg and the good folks at LB's Meat Market, the inaugural sponsor of this year's podcast, on University Avenue, across from Kroger. Celebrate with the best protein for your Ole Miss grilling needs with Greg and the rest of the folks there. And be sure to tell them that Red Cup sent you for exclusive deals and promotions. Remember, the Philly combo is back for just $10 right now. And you've got your lunch specials, 11 to 3:30, Monday through Friday. That's LB's Meat Market on University, across from Kroger. Arby's is full of shit. LB's has the meats. Speaking of Oxford, if you're looking to get some libations going, be sure to check out Wonderbird Spirits, North Mississippi's first distillery. It's a quick little 8-minute drive south of Oxford on Old Taylor Road, and it's the only spot in the Magnolia State for a true grain-to-glass gin experience. The space is fantastic. Chan and the rest of the guys there are doing some fantastic stuff. Go there, get a tour, do a tasting, or you could do both. Inquire about maybe renting it out for a private event, maybe a anniversary, a wedding reception, a rehearsal dinner, something. The place is amazing. That's Wonderbird Spirits, North Mississippi's first distillery in Taylor, Mississippi. And be sure to follow them on Instagram for all their latest updates and comings and goings there at Wonderbird. Speaking of libations, if you're in Memphis and you're looking to stock the cooler this year, Old Dominic on South Front Street is your place to go. Just like Wonderbird, you can go there for a tasting, for a tour, or both. And be sure to check out their rooftop bar, which is super awesome, has some great views of downtown Memphis, of the Mississippi River. You can try their Healing Station High Rye Bourbon, the Memphis Toddy, the Memphis Vodka, or the new Honeybell Vodka. You can get it all there or at your local package store. So celebrate with that Healing Station Bourbon, a very small batch High Rye Bourbon by the folks at Old Dominic. It's a bold classic whiskey with notes of stone fruit, dark cherry, just the right amount of spice and heritage that dates back to 1866. You can enjoy it neat or even in your favorite cocktail like an old fashioned. It's got a mash bill of 52% corn, 44% rye, and 4% malt. Healing Station stands alone in its category of high rye bourbons. So you could do that, or you can enjoy a quick taste of Memphis Toddy before the game this weekend, and then you can wind down with that Healing Station afterwards. So, like we always say, Ask your package store where you can find Healing Station by Old Dominic. And, as always, OD encourages you to share a sip responsibly. And last but certainly not least, if you're in the market for a new vehicle, make it a Clark Ford vehicle. Corey Clark and the rest of the folks in Amory, Mississippi on Highway 25 are committed to finding you a new vehicle today. Be sure to browse their inventory online, request more information about the vehicles, set up a test drive, and inquire about financing all online. If you want to do it a little old school, maybe conversate via telephone, you can give them a call at 662-257-1900 and get in a new Ford today. And we are back here, Hangover Edition, South Carolina. Ole Miss 59, South Carolina 42. Some people are now dubbing it as, well, Muschamp has been kiffined. He is no longer the head coach in Columbia. All right, Matt Corral sets the single game record passing yards. The only person legitimately close to him, Shea Patterson, previously held the record at 489, but that was against UT Martin. Chad Kelly threw for 465 against Auburn. If you want to call it legitimate because it's a conference game, Jordan Tiamu, 457 against Vandy. Archie, 436 against Alabama in 1969. And then other than that, Chad Kelly, 421 against Bama in 2016 in a loss. Matt Corral, 513 yards against what I thought was a pretty decent South Carolina secondary. J.C. Horn has played really well all season. Amu Kamara has been playing really well. He was a little banged up, and I don't think he finished the game, but it wasn't just a bunch of chumps over there. It's SEC defense, SEC players, and my God. Ben, you were there. Nick, were you there?
I was there.
Okay, y'all were both there. So in person, how incredible was it to watch?
I mean, someone said earlier, maybe one of y'all said that Elijah Moore is a damn good running back. Elijah Moore is the best player on the field every time he takes, you know, wherever he lines up, he's the best player out there, each position. He's the best player. If you were playing Alabama, I'm sorry. He's that good. I mean, man, he was great out of the backfield last night. He could be a running back if we wanted him to be. After last night, I came away. I think we had this talk earlier on the podcast a few weeks ago about where would he go in the NFL. If I'm an NFL team and I'm especially like a contender, if I'm sitting there at 27 or 28 in the draft and I'm, you know, maybe made it to the, you know, NFC championship game or the, you know, NFC wild card round and I need a playmaker, I go get Elijah Moore. He's unbelievable.
It's big praise there.
I think he's as good as Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and that guy's making, you know, waves for the Chiefs this year.
No, I don't disagree with you. It was a really good game. It was fun to watch. Obviously, it was more fun in person than I'm sure it was on TV. Look, we didn't just have big touchdown plays. There were just a lot of long passing plays in general, and those are typically exciting. Braylon Sanders caught one or two. I think he caught two. And I liked that the heads-up play that we made after the really long one, Ole Miss would have been going from left to right. I think it was about a 65-yard pass. I was trying to go back and do the
– one to Braylon?
Yeah, to Braylon over the middle of the field. You know, he caught two long ones, but this was the – I think this would have been the second one. We ran up to the play to the ball quickly and snapped it so they wouldn't review it to see if the ground caused any kind of fumble or anything or
was it,
incompletion.
Was it the one he – full extension?
Yes, and it could have almost been pass interference. The guy kind of got on it pretty early.
So I watched the highlights earlier today. Corral threw it from the 25, and then I believe it was about a 60-yard throw.
Yeah.
65.
It was a good ball. Hit him in stride. Couldn't have put it anywhere else. And but anyway, it was a fun atmosphere. Excuse me. Sorry, I had to sneeze. It was a fun atmosphere, and – you know, there were kind of a lot of students there given.
Yeah, COVID. There were,
you know, we had much smaller student crowds last year.
Oh yeah.
Much smaller. I bet there were 5,000 students. Probably.
Yeah. And it's also the last night was their last, you know, home game of the season that they'll be in town. And I think that they showed out.
I also think that I like starting college football later.
I do too. I love this time of year. I was watching highlights of the Oregon-Washington State game. You see how much snow they had shoved over to the side?
I think that's awesome. I would much rather have football games in 40-degree weather than 400.
Absolutely. Yeah. Talking about the crowd, and now I know the pandemic, so you can't, and people need to be safe and all that. But the game last night was just such a bummer because I feel like the crowd would have been great in a non-pandemic season because it was a huge opportunity for the program. It was a huge like swing game. I wouldn't say it was make or break because of obviously the whole you know, climate of the season and all that. But I mean, it was a game that I think Ole Miss really needed to win, because now you got three games left. You have a chance to legitimately go 5-5. Who knows with A&M if Kellen Mond's out? I mean, that's a wild card now. I mean, now Isaiah Spiller's probably going to run for 400 yards, but can they stop Matt Corral? I mean, it's fun. I think the fans showing up, like Ben said, 5,000 students, I think that's indicative of the offense and how exciting and fun it is, to where they know, like, it's going to be a shootout. But, I mean, look, we said this a couple weeks ago. I'd rather have this kind of game than have a badass defense and no offense where you're just, you know, watching like a 12-7 game.
All I could think about last night was, man, I wish we had a full crowd for this, because it would have been – it was a perfect night. It was about 66 degrees with a light breeze. It had been great weather all day yesterday. It was like a really, really good – I guess it was sort of warm for fall, but it was a really good fall day. And South Carolina in town, team doesn't come here very often. Against a team you felt like you could beat, and also you felt like you could build some momentum going to the rest of the season. That's all I could think about last night was, man, this would be awesome if the stadium was full. I just wish the stadium was full. It'd be so – and it was still a lot of fun, but it's going to be so much fun, you know, next year whenever we can get the stadium full, because that's – you put butts in seats, man. I mean, we watched us kick field goals from the one against LSU. That didn't do it. Like, coming out, even if you lose a game like last night, you know, just that offense and that type of quick play, you know, quick strike mentality. But also, you know, even when we were down 42-38, I was concerned about us getting a stop, but I had no worries that we were going to go down and score again. And I hadn't had that in the last few years. And I felt good again to think, you know, it's okay, we got the ball back. That's what we want. You know, can we get a stop? I don't know, but you know, we're absolutely going to go down and score.
So right now, looking at the conference stats, Matt Corral now leads the SEC in passing, 2,359 yards, 22 passing touchdowns. His QBR is 189.39. He's averaging damn near 11 yards per attempt, completing 74%. So he's at 2,359 with three games left. He could easily catch Jevin Snead, who threw for 2,667 in 2008. Could catch Chad Kelly, who threw for 2,758 in a shortened 2016 season. And I don't know if it's out of the realm of possibility for him to catch Eli, who threw for 2,948 in 2001. I don't know. Maybe he gets
right now?
He's at 2,359. So he's averaging
with three games to go.
Yeah.
He's going to get 3,300 minimum.
So Bo threw for 3,346 in 2013, and then he threw for 3,194 in 2014. He could get to top five single season in 10 games. I mean, if that's not the Lane Kiffin effect, I don't know what it is. And Jeff Levy, too. Can't leave him out, because he's done a fantastic job.
Did Moore set the single season record last night?
No, he is okay. 12 shy.
Okay, right, well, two things then. First of all, I thought that Glenn Waddle said he was the first Ole Miss player to go over 1,000, which maybe he meant the first in so few games. Okay,
that's why
I was like, well, he must be number one. But also, he's 12 yards away with three games left. You kidding me? And it's all against SEC competition. I mean, we were talking about someone sent the stats of the last few Heisman winners, and they're talking about Joe Burrow, who was exceptional last year. But in the first seven games, they played Georgia Southern, Utah State, Northwestern State, and Vanderbilt. And now I know we've played Vanderbilt, who's pretty dadgum bad, and we've played some teams without great defenses. We haven't played a team as bad as Northwestern State, and we probably hadn't played a team as bad as Utah State. So, you know, maybe Georgia Southern could beat Kentucky or something like that, but these are SEC teams, and he's 12 shy of the record with three games left and in a shortened season.
Yeah. It's crazy, man, and I'm trying to find the numbers here, because Ole Miss Uniform Archives tweeted it out earlier. Here it is. Okay, through the first seven games, Corral, 74 completion percentage, close to 2,400 yards, 22 touchdowns. Burrow in 2019 with non-con, 79% completion, 2484, 29 touchdowns. That's insane. Kyler Murray in 2018, 72% completion, 1977 in 25. And then Baker Mayfield in 2017, 73% completion percentage, 23-47 and 19. Now they had those guys. So Burrow had three picks. Kyler had three picks. Baker had two picks. So we know about Corral. He has nine. Six came in a, you know, an anomaly is what it looks like against Arkansas. We were talking about this earlier. If he has just a good game, he could probably even have been average and just not turn the ball over a bunch against Arkansas. And if Ole Miss wins that game, he could be in the, you know, others receiving votes for the Heisman right now.
Yeah, I think there's no question. I mean, that Arkansas game, six of them, one was at the very end, but, you know, in garbage time, essentially, it was a bad game. I mean, you know, got into a hornet's nest up there, but past that, I mean, he has been so good. And I guess you could tell me, oh, he hadn't played in an elite defense. But at some point, every defense can't just be bad. You know, I mean, you're not going to play 10 Ohio States every week, mm-hmm. you know, 10 Iowa defenses. You're going to face, you know, up and down. But everyone can't be bad. Maybe Florida's down a little bit. Maybe Bama's down a little bit. But it's still a Bama defense. It's still a Florida defense full of a bunch of five stars. It's still an Auburn defense full of a bunch of five stars. So perhaps they're just, quote, down because they played us. I mean, you know, because we put up a ton of yards on each of those teams.
Well, that's what I was going to say was you can't really dismiss what he's done because he's done this against Bama. He did it against Florida. Now he's done it against South Carolina, who, you know, not a great defense, but again, SEC caliber players. I think another big test next week against A&M, who's had a really good defense all year. They're a top five team. I mean, it's a free shot. I mean, it's the absolute, just exact definition of a free shot. Nobody's going to expect you to win. You're going to be a heavy underdog. I'm excited, and I think that this is where, like, a coach like Kiffin and Jeff Lebby, when they're coaching offense, this is where they're going to thrive, to where this is, hey, we're going to just let it all hang out. Nobody expects us to win. Nobody expects us to do this against a top five team. Let's go ahead and do it. They've already done it twice against Bama and Florida. So who says they can't, you know, the age old, you know, why not us type thing. So I do want to say this before I forget. Elijah Moore is cruising to an SEC receiving yards title right now. He's at 1,054. The closest guy to him is Devontae Smith at 759. I think it's ridiculous. Elijah Moore should win the Biletnikoff. It's not even
close. There anyone else up there nationally?
Let's see. Probably. I think there was a dude from UCF that's up there. Let us take a gander. While I'm looking, Matt Corral is now fifth in the country in passing yards. The NCAA's football site is so bad. Receiving yards, Elijah Moore is now first in the country.
Yeah.
The guy, Marlon Williams from UCF, is second, 942 and eight touchdowns. Right now, it looks like the only person with more touchdown catches, Terrace Marshall at LSU, has nine. Jalen Darden at North Texas has 10. Elijah Moore has eight right now. So, yeah, really close to breaking AJ's single season record. The single season receiving yards record, 1320 by AJ. He's probably going to break that. Just remarkable what he's done. I mean, coming off the fake pee, everybody was mad, and then everybody wasn't because Matt Luke got fired, and most of the people knew that that was the reason why he got fired, which, you know, I think all three of us are in that camp of, like, thank God he did. But yeah, I mean, going from that to what he's doing now, I mean, the dude is arguably one of the most dynamic playmakers in the country.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Are you on mute? You said he's how many behind AJ? I thought you said he was 12 off the single season record.
Catches. 12 receptions.
Okay,
from so breaking it. Receiving yards, he's at 1,054. AJ had 13
over 12 games. Don't forget that.
So, right. So he's 200 and change from breaking the single season receiving yards record. He already holds the single game record against Vandy a couple weeks ago. And then on Saturday, he's now. Okay, hold on. The top five single game receiving yards records for Ole Miss for program history. Elijah Moore has 1, 3, and 4.
He's got to be up there in the SEC too. I mean, all time single games. This is the first time somebody's ever gone for 225 plus in consecutive games in conference history.
Yeah, 225 against South Carolina, 227 against Florida, and then
268 or whatever it was against Vandy, whatever the number was.
238. Yeah. 238. So just bonkers. Another thing I need to mention before I forget, Kenny Yeboah, 509 yards receiving. I mean, come on. If you're a tight end, you want to play in this offense. It's silly. And then running the football, Jerry Neely quietly had another great game. He's fourth in the conference in rushing, 8 rushing touchdowns. He's just so slippery. It's something where those types of backs, you know, they're not big, but they're slippery enough to where you never really get a clean shot on them. He runs that stretch play about as good as anybody since Dexter. And then hell, Nick, Ben, I think both y'all mentioned it. Elijah looked good running the football as well. I mean, it's just, it's crazy to see what this offense has been able to do in you know, year one, year zero, whatever you want to call it. I believe, let's take a look. Ole Miss is still leading the SEC in rushing, 212 yards a game, 4.4, about 4.5 yards a touch running the football, 17 rushing touchdowns.
We already need to figure out crazy something next year from a wide receiver perspective. If Moore happens to leave, you know, I don't want to say we're devoid of talent. I think we have the talent out there. Just no one's shown it yet. So, you know, and I'm sure that they're well aware of that. But if we have to go find a JUCO guy or something, because I don't think that Drummond is the answer. Braylon Sanders is, I think he'll have another season left, obviously. But, I mean, I don't think he's the answer. So, yeah, I mean, we got to go find someone else past Moore. Because as great as he's been, he's probably masked a wide receiving core that's maybe a little bit underperforming. Would y'all agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, I think I said it during the game that somebody has to do something early in the game. And then I don't know if Dontario Drummond and Braylon Sanders' ears were ringing, but they stepped up. Jonathan Mingo wasn't available because of an injury. But yeah, I mean, Drummond had a touchdown catch. Braylon Sanders obviously went off, had a couple huge catches. And then, yeah, I mean, they use Ely out of the backfield a lot. They move Elijah Moore around a ton. So, I mean, this Ole Miss is 3-4, but I mean, this offense is an absolute problem. I mean,
Go ahead, Zach.
Well, I was just going to say the three games left, like, they're winnable because the offense is just so damn good.
Well, like, Nick, your point's taken that I guess in theory, the receivers have underperformed, some of them, but I mean, it's really hard to, I guess, be, I mean, you're looking for things at that point.
Oh, absolutely.
If you're saying that the receivers are, because you got the offense is so good. And that's not me being argumentative with you. It's more to how well Ole Miss has played. I mean, you lead the SEC in rushing. You've got the best quarterback in the conference. You've got the best receiver in the conference. You've got the second best tight end in the SEC. You've got, you know, a really good offensive line. And so, like, there's, if you want to say that Ole Miss could improve somewhere, I guess you could say that Ole Miss could maybe spread the ball more to other playmakers. I don't know. I mean, I'm you're really grasping at straws. I'm saying anybody is. Anyway.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Ben, because the offensive line has just been tremendous. They've gotten better every week. Huge shuffle at the beginning of the year.
They're not necessarily old. No. I mean,
no. I mean, you've got Caleb Warren out there playing. I mean, Nick Broeker's going to be gone. He's going to go to the NFL. And
is he a junior?
No, he's a senior, I believe. I think.
Oh, what? I was sitting there thinking he was a sophomore. Wow.
Maybe somebody needs to fact check me, but he got invited to the Senior Bowl. He already said he's gone.
he's probably a senior.
Royce. What? Yeah, I think that's right. So yeah,
Nick Broeker is a sophomore. He was a 2019 freshman All American.
Am I thinking of Royce Newman then? I'm thinking of Royce Newman. He's the one with the mullet. That's right. Sorry, my bad.
I was like, Nick Broeker is a senior. I feel like we just signed him.
Yeah, he was the one that Ohio State tried to snag. Yeah. So big ups to Randy Clements and the O-line, because I mean, like, you can only do so much with really good running backs. You got to have some guys up front to pave the way. They were great. You mentioned Broeker. He was absolutely just embarrassing people in that game on Saturday. He was mowing people down. Ben Brown is now coming into his own as a center. He looks so much better than he did in the first couple weeks. On the other side, you know, Royce Newman's played well at the right tackle spot. And then the guards have been shuffling around a bit, but I mean, they've been well. Jalen Cunningham's played a little bit. Caleb Warren's played in there. You got Reese McIntyre that's been in and out. I mean, Clements has done a fantastic job. You've got to tip your cap to him. If we're tipping our cap all around for the offense, you got to give a shout out to the big uglies up front. So last thing here, guys, anything else from Saturday that you want to mention before we close up shop here?
No, I mean, I'm with you. I think every game's winnable from here on. A&M obviously less so than the other two, but Ole Miss should be staring at least a 5-5 year one under Kiffin, and that is just spectacular considering what we've been watching the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I hate that. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything, but we probably are not going to play the Texas A&M game this next weekend. So I'm already, looking forward to, or I'm already disappointed about that. But past that, man, I don't want to say they're just winnable. We absolutely should beat MSU. We should beat the brakes off of MSU. I mean, that offense, even if that offense is good.
That's a name your score game.
Even if they score 50, we should score 60. We should cover in that game. We really should. And that LSU team's a team we should beat. So it's not just that they're winnable. It's two games that I think we're probably favorites in. I mean, well, I don't know about LSU, but we're definitely going to be favorites against MSU, and it's not going to be a large spread against LSU. So, I mean, you finished the season 3-1, and, I think anyone would take that.
The state line is going to be like 16.5.
It really is.
Yeah, it might be.
I'm serious.
Look, guys, before we go, I'll say this. I say you name your score in the Egg Bowl. You might be able to name your score in the Magnolia Bowl.
Yeah.
LSU's kind of floundering right now. Miles Brennan's out for the year, so they're playing a true freshman at quarterback. Now, Ole Miss's defense is nothing to write home about at all. But can LSU stop this offense? I mean, shit, look what State did to them.
I think we just have to know that nobody's really going to stop the offense. We may have a game where we turn the ball over a bunch, but there's Florida and Alabama didn't, and LSU's not going to. No.
All right, that's going to do it for the Hangover Edition. Again, apologies for being a little tardy, but we still got it to you. Ole Miss gets the victory over South Carolina, 59-42, improved to 3-4. As of recording this, it still looks like Ole Miss A&M is happening next week. That's in College Station 2:30 on CBS. Should be a big game. So you get Gary and Brad, so it'll be not prime time, but I mean it's big time national television game on CBS. That's your chance to get on the national stage once again and prove your worth. They did it earlier this year against Bama. You get another shot in College Station against I believe could potentially be without Kellamon there due to contact tracing, but we'll see. We'll have more later on this week. We'll have our picks episode coming to you later this week, and much more on the site at redcuprebellion.com. So thanks for tuning in. We appreciate you. We appreciate the sponsors. Thanks to Ben. Thanks to Nick for joining me. With that, I'm Zach. This has been Podcast Rebellion, the Hangover Edition. Thanks again. We out.